I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Kansas City, Missouri's new chief of police has spent almost three decades working for the department, implementing its policies and observing the results. Now the city's top cop, Rick Smith, wants more officers and more social workers on staff. He aspires to improve relations between the department and the public and reinstitute community policing. But can any of it reduce Kansas City crime? Today, Chief Smith and the president of the police board share their goals for the department. We'll also check in with the Kansas City Public Schools superintendent about the latest accountability scores for the district. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Good morning and welcome to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Test scores are out for public school districts in Missouri, and this is always a big day for the Kansas City School District. Kansas City Public Schools last year regained provisional accreditation and is hoping to regain full accreditation for the first time in decades. The scores for the district this year aren't bad. KCUR's Ellie Moxley reports the district scored a 63.9% on the latest accountability measure. That's within a range to keep the district provisionally accredited, but it's down from last year's 70%, which remains the cutoff for full accreditation. For now, at least, it seems unlikely the district will be fully accredited. District officials insist there's still a lot to celebrate here and a lot to continue working on. We're joined now by the superintendent. That's Mark Bedell. And Mark, it's always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Steve. We appreciate this.
Mr. Superintendent, a lot of officials in the district were hopeful that this would be the year that the district reached full accreditation. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. What's your reaction to these numbers?
Yeah, it's not something that I did not expect. And
meaning you did expect it.
Well, I mean, I did expect us at this point to pretty much be where we are. Mm-hmm. I shared this with the board back in November after my first 100 days and after bringing in some external auditors that have done audits on where we are as a school district, that in reality, we're probably about 3 to 4 years away. And I've shared that with our board back in November. I told them specifically that we have to make sure that we have an aligned curriculum. We have to make sure that we're giving professional development to our teachers. We have to make sure that our principals are 100% focused on instruction. And so with the previous team that was here, previous administrators shared with me that Dr. Bedell, we've made a lot of progress in a lot of areas, but it's the academic needle that we have to do a better job on. And if you think about where we are this year, we saw a dip with social studies. We saw a dip with our attendance rates. We didn't get points on our science performance, even though we made growth on our MPI. This is based on a 3-year average. Mm-hmm. And so we have to take into account that it's 3 years of data that's average in order to give us our APR scores. So while we've made a lot of progress, and I could tell you just looking at this sheet that I have right here, we've made a lot of progress in a tremendous amount of areas, but when you don't make the substantial progress that the state expects you to make, it is going to be very difficult to be able to maintain a 70 or higher. And so that's what we're working on right now. I mean, we're proud of the work that's been done, but we have to move at a faster pace than where we're moving.
I'm wondering to what extent this is a disappointment for you and the district, Mark, because, you know, so many officials were telling me in the last year or two that this was going to be the year. And you're suggesting now 3 to 4 years, perhaps, for full accreditation. How big a disappointment is this?
I don't know that it's a disappointment for me, because one of the things that I said that I was going to do when I came in as superintendent was be completely transparent about where we are. And I think that's part of the reason why you bring auditors in. One of the things that I will share with this community that we know we focused on last year was really looking at putting in a dropout prevention system. Mm-hmm. And it's paid huge dividends. We see right now that the school district for the first time is at 70% or higher in recent history with graduation rates. We've jumped by 3.1%. And as I've stated earlier, in the majority of our academic areas, we've actually grown. We've actually made progress. We didn't regress, especially after a first year of a superintendent coming in and making assessments and having to make changes. You know, for the most part, we have trended in the right direction, and I think school by school, we're continuing to trend. If you were to take a look at our data and just compare how did the school district perform last year compared to this year, you will see that there is a tremendous amount of progress that we've made in many, many areas. But when we go and we start looking at three-year averages, then that kind of changes it a little bit. You lose your 2014 data, so now we're focusing on 15, 16, and 17.
Right.
And ultimately, that also changes the numbers. But I'm very proud of where we are. I'm very proud of what we've identified, and we've identified these things last November, that these are the things that we have to work on if we are going to be able to have sustainability with accreditation. You don't want to be up one year, down the next year, up the next.
Consistency.
It has to be consistent, and that's what we're focusing on.
Let's talk about a couple of areas that you've already mentioned here that need your focus and your attention, social studies and attendance. Let's start with social studies. What's the issue there?
Yeah, well, it's quite frankly simple. One of the things we did was prior to me coming in, we did some realignment at Lincoln College Prep. And so ultimately what happened was that we ended up assessing two grade levels in 2016. And in this year, we lost a cohort because we tested two cohorts of Lincoln students. And so while we had some regression in that area, that's the primary reason. You lose 135 kids, and those kids pass that test as 10th graders. In addition to those 11th graders, you're going to take a hit. You're going to take some hit. Even though other schools are performing, you still lost a strong cohort of students. And so that's what happened with social studies. I don't think that there was anything intentional. It was just that what administrators and the school officials wanted to do was to get that course knocked out earlier so the kids could focus more on some of the advanced courses and take more options with their IB courses. That's actually what happened with social studies.
So in theory, those numbers should bounce up next year or not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Let's move on to the attendance piece because this is tougher. The numbers, they're not what they need to be. What's happening?
So with our attendance, we have a situation right now where we're about around 80% of our students have an attendance rate of at least 90%, and the state target is 90%. And so this is where we need
help. You're 10 points below where you got
to
be.
We need to be at 90%. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, this is where our parents have a huge impact. We need support with getting our kids to school. And people have to understand in the community, it's more than just coming to school. If kids are coming to school late, and let's say that they missed the first period of the school day, that's equivalent to 14% of your day. So if you missed that one class and you're at the rest of your classes and you have an 86% rate for the day, guess what happens? It's the same as zero. Mm-hmm. That's what happens on a 90-90. That's why it's critical that we get our kids there on time, because 90-90 is different than average daily attendance. Average daily attendance is how we're funded. 90-90 means you're in school 90% of the time, you're in class 90% of the time. The second you fall below 90%, 89% is the same as a zero.
Mm, okay. But this is a piece where you just said you need parental support. The school district can't go out and make kids show up at school on time. You need parents, you need guardians to chip in here and make sure this happens.
We need help. I mean, it's just the bottom line. And this should be an area where this should be a no-brainer. Like, every school district in this state should get the full complement of those points on 90-90 just by people making sure that we get the kids to school. And then it's our job when they're in school to not allow for kids to skip or not allow for kids not to be in their classes full time. And if they aren't in their classes full time, let's make sure that we're properly documenting if they're out at the nurse office, because the state will work with us on that. So you got to have systems in place that allows for us to be able to really hit this 90-90 target. But we've been a school district that has struggled in this area historically, and we need, and this is what we talk about in our strategic plan, schools can't do it alone. We need the community to support us. And then there's another component, Steve, and this is the mobility piece. I tell people we have 40% of our kids that are mobile. Meaning that they move. They move in and out of our school systems. And in some of my schools, it's 50, 60, and one school, 70%.
Wow.
Where kids are moving in and out. And so then we get compared to a school district like Blue Springs or Lee Summit,
where it's more stable.
Where it's much more stable. But when these kids are mobile like that, and we pulled our data, the kids that we have that have been in our school system 2 years or longer perform 40 to 80% better on state assessments than kids who've come to us less than 2 years. And this is a reality that we have to deal with. I'm not interested in making excuses. I like to state the facts when people want to compare KCPS to other school districts that don't have the same issues. Compare us to districts that's dealing with the same type of mobility and those types of things, and let's see how we're moving the needle with school districts that aren't experiencing this type of mobility.
Kansas City, Missouri School Superintendent Mark Bedell is with us here today. What are you going to do, Mr. Superintendent, to encourage parents to get their students, their kids to school on time? What has to happen there?
Well, I feel like we have to do a better job of educating our parents on the difference between ADA and 90-90, and mm-hmm. we've done that in some of our community meetings. I think we have to do a better job of educating our parents in the community on really understanding this APR model, because mm-hmm. all they see and what they hear is the actual end result, but it's much bigger than that. There's a formula that's included in here, and it's very difficult, especially for a superintendent like me, where I come from institutions where you're measured based on 1 year to the next year, and it's not 3 years of cumulative data. You know, you start comparing how we did last year, this year compared to last year, you're going to see a lot of green, and that's different. And so we have to be able to educate our parents on what this accountability system really means, and what is it going to take for us to be able to move further into being a fully accredited schools district.
Let's look at some of the good news here just quickly, if we can, Dr. Bedell. Science scores were up. Graduation rates were up. In fact, again, Ellie Moxie of KCUR reports that the district already has met the state's goal of a 90% post-secondary placement rate, and that's kids who enter college, a career, or the military within 6 months of graduating by 2020. Sounds like that's something to build on there.
Absolutely. And it's one of the things that we're doing as we continue to focus on our goals and our strategic plan, goals 4 and 5, making sure that kids are prepared for college, career, and life, but also making sure that kids are critical thinkers and 21st century learners. And so what we wanted to do was to really focus on making sure that our kids have a pathway when they graduate from this mm-hmm. school system. Where are you going, and are we making sure that we're preparing you for these various options that exist out there? And then having an accountability that these kids are actually going to these institutions or into the military as stated. And if not, why? What happened? What do we need to do to make sure that we get you on a track where you can begin to build a career?
So just to wrap up yours, what's the earliest that you think that the Kansas City, Missouri School District might begin to be in range of full accreditation?
I mean, I told my board 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
And that's everywhere that I've worked, generally a minimum of 3 years for you to put in your systems, to put in a new curriculum, to put in the PD, to train people, to make sure that your state standard, you understand what the state standards are. Do you know how to unpack those state standards? So we're teaching what we need to teach. And that's clearly what we heard from the Council of Great City Schools audit, is that we have to be more refined and more intentional mm-hmm. around that area if we want to move the instructional needle. That's basically what we have to do at this point. We have to move instructional performance. That's just the bottom line. And so I've shared that in everywhere that I've worked, where I've been able to demonstrate that we could turn around a system. It's been a minimum of 3 years, 4 years. And I tell people, we talk about St. Louis a lot, right? But I shared with my board in the community that they gave Kelvin Adams 8 years to get everything in place. It takes time. It's not one of these deals where you can just go in
a
and
year
flip
and turn
something
it around.
In a year
yeah.
and turn it around.
Just a final question here. Lots of controversy involving the state school board and Governor Eric Greitens' involvement here. The accusation is that he's politicizing the board. I'm wondering what you make of all this and your relationship with Dr. Van Deven, and what should happen here?
Yeah, I mean, here's what I try to do. I actually have a really good relationship with Dr. Van Deven. I have a lot of respect for her, and I know that she wants what's best for our schools. I try not to get too wound up in the state level politics. I feel like as a superintendent, I try to stay out of Jefferson City to the best of my ability. My focus needs to be on this school district and doing everything that I can to get us to be fully accredited. So regardless of what happens at that level, we are confident that we're doing the right thing. So it's, I don't generally weigh in on what the governor's doing. Will it have an impact on us? Most certainly.
The accusation here is that the governor wants to broaden school choice. He wants to create more charter schools. Is that a good thing for your school district?
No, it's not. And, I think where we are right now in Kansas City, I don't know how much more can be done in that area other than vouchers at this point. And if vouchers are to get through with legislation, that not only hurts us, but that will hurt our charter school partners too. And so, and we need to really be careful on what we're wishing for and hoping for, because we're already in a very saturated market. And that's part of the reason why, if you start looking at data, not just of KCPS, but you start looking at even some of our charter counterpoints, they're struggling too. And right. Part of the reason why they're struggling is lack of resources, very limited opportunities for our kids to get a true holistic experience. So ultimately, how do we all begin to come together and have conversations to make this a much stronger educational landscape as a whole, and not continue to do this us against them scenario, because the big loser in all of this are the kids.
Yeah. That's Kansas City, Missouri School Superintendent Dr. Mark Bedell. Mark, always good to have you. Good luck with your work, okay?
Thank you.
A lot of people are rooting for you.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, time for a break. When we come back, the police chief of Kansas City, Missouri, Rick Smith, will be here along with the president of the Board of Police Commissioners. That's Leland Shuren. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, we spoke with author and illustrator Brian Selznick about his children's book and his now new film, Wonderstruck. You can find those conversations at kcur.org. Tomorrow, liberals get a bad rap, and not right enough for the right and not left enough for the left. But is there more to them than that? Then we'll talk about the first 4 months of Harry Truman's presidency and how it changed our country and the world. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, 29 years after he first joined the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, Rick Smith is now its chief. He takes over from Chief Daryl Forte at a time of rising concerns about just how violent this town is. In fact, as of this morning, the city was reporting 130 homicides for the year. That's 20 more than at this point last year. It's on pace to possibly break the all-time record. Other violent crime categories are up as well. How is the new chief going to address this? We're about to find out. Chief Rick Smith joins us now for his first appearance on Up to Date. And Chief, welcome. So nice to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thanks, Steve.
He's joined by Leland Shuren. He's an attorney who is also president of the Board of Police Commissioners. And Leland, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
And if our listeners have questions for our guests about the department, give us a shout, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Well, Chief, let's just dive straight into this. 130 homicides and counting. We've got 6 weeks to go in 2017, obviously. What's going on out there?
Well, you know, we continue to evaluate that every day.
Yeah.
I don't have a solid answer. I can't tell you this one thing is the key, because if it was, we'd be working on it.
Yeah.
You know, I said yesterday in the board meeting, it's so funny because after 30 years in policing, I think we have some of the best initiatives we've ever had, like the PAL, the NOVA, where we really have concentrated and tried to provide other avenues other than just enforcement
right.
to citizens in this
city.
These
are new wave strategies here to combat crime.
Yeah. And, you know, even with the implementation of these initiatives, we still have a rising violent crime mm-hmm. rate. So it is disheartening on one hand, but on the other hand, like we say in the police department, we're going to double down and do everything we can to try and control it. And it, as much as we can control, right, in our world, in the police world.
Leland Shuren, what are you picking up from your vantage point as president of the board here?
Well, nationally, I believe that crime is actually down. And as compared to the 80s and the 90s, Steve, and here, Kansas City in 1992 had 152 homicides. In 1993, we had 153. So we're actually not where we were, but it's not good.
What does the board want to see happen here? What do you want to see from your chief when it comes to dealing with this rising concern in town about how much violence we have here?
Well, we need plans and programs from him to combat it. It's just as simple as that. In saying that, there are it's not a total police problem, Steve. It's a societal problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of reasons for crime, and particularly for homicide, and it can't all be on the police department.
I was going to say, Chief, do you think you guys get blamed too much for violence in town because you're just the enforcers here? There's lots of other factors, as Leland just pointed out.
I don't know if blame's the right word. I think we're looked at for the answer of all the answers. And I think Jim Corwin, Chief Corwin, correctly coined, we are the face of the criminal justice system.
Former chief, yeah.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. we're out there, and I think people look at us, you know, when you turn on the 10 o'clock news, what do you see? You see police officers, you know, regardless of the event of the homicide and stuff. You know, we don't see other fractions of the criminal justice system at the scene. So I think people naturally assume that we're the ones that's going to come up with all the solutions.
Well, let's talk about some things that might help here, Chief, because one question on the table that I know you get all the time, do you have enough officers on the street? You just put in a request for 21 new dispatcher positions and 30 new patrol officer positions. On your blog, you wrote this, that we're unable to provide the kind of services that taxpayers expect. You said that point blank. The city already spends something like 75% of its budget on public safety. Isn't that enough?
Well, from what we heard, the forums that I attended for that started with the how we're going to do the chief selection process, I attended all of them. I attended neighborhood groups and meetings as I was going through the process. And then afterwards, the number one issue was people are being put on hold in 911, and response times north and south are too long.
Average of 9 minutes and 20 seconds right now, you wrote.
That's correct. That these are community concerns. I'm listening to what the community is saying. Hey, this is what we need to help this city be better. And I feel as part of the chief and getting out in the community, I need to relay those concerns. And that's what I did through the budget.
So if you get 30 new patrol officers that you asked for, what does that do to response times?
Well, we're hoping it would decrease, especially in the areas where we feel we're understaffed.
Mm-hmm. Where are you understaffed right now?
Well, I think we could make a case that about anywhere. I mean, if you say there's more violent crime, you're understaffed here, right? But right now, looking at just response times, our greatest response times are up north of the river.
21 new dispatcher positions. The point there is, as you said, people call 911 and they're put on hold for a while. What needs to happen there? What should the goal be?
Well, the goal should be an instant answer. I think a reasonable rate is like under 10 seconds. We're at 30. You know, that's too long. And that's just an average, right? That some people are on hold for minutes, you know, 10 minutes sometimes. I mean, to me, that's not what an expectation of a taxpayer is, right? I think the normal person in this city expects when they call 911 that someone answers their call. And that's the kind of service we want to provide.
You know, Leland Sherman, we have a new communication center, a relatively new communication center there that I thought was supposed to deal with this 911 issue. The chief and I share something here. He started in 1988 on the force. I was down there covering the force at that time for the Kansas City Star. I wrote a story at that time about the delays that citizens experience when they called 911. Here we are all these years later, we're still talking about it.
Yes, and it's a problem. The a group called the Association of Public Safety, which is about the largest, oldest group to study these things, says that we should have 150 dispatchers.
And we got how many?
Well, if we get these 21 new ones, we will have 113.
And the goal should be what again?
150.
So we would still be short by 40 something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So and that is a tough job being a dispatcher. It's a difficult job. We've had these people working because we're short-handed. We've had these people working a lot of required overtime.
Mm-hmm.
We need to hire these dispatchers, and we need to cut down the time that it takes to pick up a line.
How hopeful are you, again, as president of the board here, Leland Sherman, that the city council is going to say yes to 30 more patrol officers and yes to 21 more dispatchers?
I'm going to be very surprised if they do not.
Mm-hmm.
I And go, I want to go back one thing. You said 75% of the budget goes to public safety.
Yeah.
First place, that's 75% of the general revenue.
That's right.
Second, public safety is more than the police department. So
the fire department, the ambulance service, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I believe the municipal court is part of that. I'm not sure. And I believe that the airport security is also. Hmm. I just don't know exactly everything that's in there. But it's not all police department.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more important for a city to do anyway than provide for public safety.
So given all this, then, are we at something of a crisis situation here, Chief? You're short of the number of officers you need. You're way down, apparently, from the number you need, number of dispatchers you need. Where are we right now in Kansas City?
I don't think we're at crisis, no. I mean, do we know we have staffing issues? Sure. But I think the idea is we're looking at what we have and we're trying to address those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt that the police department's expensive. I'm not taking that away. We all get that.
Right.
But an investment in this community, the investment of driving down violent crime, as I like to say, allows this whole city to grow together at once.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. And whether it's the police department, whether it's the mayor, whether it's city council, I think we all want the same things.
Chief Rick Smith is our guest, along with Leland Shuren, the president of the Board of Police Commissioners. If you have a question, 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Chief, you made it clear when you took over that it was your intention to take more police personnel from headquarters at 12th and Locust and put them out on the streets. How successful have you been with that?
I don't know if I specifically said headquarters. I wanted more people out on the street.
Okay.
So, yeah, what we've done is we've rearranged some of our hours so that we have more officers on the street during our peak hours of call load and activity. So we've already done some arrangements to change some shifts around to make sure we have better coverage. We continue to evaluate. Every week, I just came out of the weekly crime meeting. Every week at 9 o'clock, we sit around a table and we discuss these topics. How can we do here? Why is this neighborhood on fire? Why is this neighborhood having better problems? How did we succeed over here?
Right.
And we discuss it as a department to try and make sure we are addressing the needs of those neighborhoods and groups.
Do you think you've gone as far as you can in terms of rearranging schedules and that kind of thing to do the best you can with personnel on the street?
I think we're close, yes.
Okay. You also talked about the need for more body cameras. Why is that important?
Well, I think society is going to expect that everyone has a body camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just where we're headed as a society. We already have in-car cameras. We've had them for years. The next step is to get body cameras.
You know, there's a widespread perception in some communities that there's a disparity between how cops treat African Americans and how they treat whites. What's your response to that?
Well, so much of this is based on perception and how people grow up and what they've been told or how they've been educated, all kinds of stuff. Yes, I think there's all kinds of perceptions. Does the police department work on that every day? Absolutely. We're in the communities, all communities in this city, and we try and build bridges and show people that we are there to try and help people succeed. We are trying to help neighborhoods be strong. We are trying to reduce crime in the city.
What do you do exactly as a department, as a chief, to address this very sensitive issue?
Oh, we're all over the... I could go on a list of things we're involved with, but every weekend we're someplace. We are with groups. We are with church groups. We are with neighborhood groups. We're going to radio shows. We're doing all kinds of stuff to make sure that our message gets out, that the police department is here looking out for the best interest of this city, and that's the goal.
Is it working?
You would have to ask other people's perceptions. But
yeah.
I think in some – let me give you an example, Steve. When the Ferguson thing came up and I was at a station at East Patrol, one of the officers came up to me and said, hey, boss, we've had 5 neighborhood leaders call in and say, if we have any problems in our neighborhood, we're going to tell you who it is and we want them arrested because we don't want problems there. Is that community working? I think it is. I think that's the difference between us and some other cities in America, is that we have those bonds that we've worked on for years to establish. This is not something new for KCPD.
What about this whole notion of diversity training for your force, and what are you doing on that front?
We've had diversity training intermittently through the years. When we have a good program that comes through, we usually try and latch on to it. We've had people internally talk about you know, their perspectives from, you know, we have the exact same thing in a 2,000-member organization that we have in the city. We have different perspectives internally, too. We've had those discussions.
Yeah.
So I think the idea is that everyone has to understand that not everyone's life's the same, and we don't all come from the same backgrounds.
You know, just from personal experience, I'm just going to be blunt here, from covering the department back in the day now, okay, when you first began down there, because so many homicides, for instance, are black-on-black homicides, my sense over 3 or 4 years of working in the department was that, yeah, there's an issue inside the department when it comes to how officers look at people of color when it comes to violent crime. There was just a sense that there was a correlation there and some feelings of ill will as you worked in there day in and day out. And I'm wondering how effectively the department wrestles with this idea when, to be blunt, a lot of the violent crime in town occurs between black suspects and black victims.
Well, we know what our stats are. There's no question.
They're on your website every day.
Right. There's no question what the stats are. My point to you, Steve, I worked homicide, and like I told everyone 5 years, no one homicide got worked harder than another or any other difference because of a race of a victim. That never happened while I was there. And I don't know that it happened in the department. I know there's discussions like this, but I could give you a list of families, black, white, Hispanic, and say, hey, did we do a great job for you? Did we do everything we could? And they would be in this room saying, yes, they did. And yes, and I'm sure just like when anything else in the world, we can get the same viewpoint. Opposite viewpoint from other families. I get that. But do I think systemically that we pick some case because of a race? Absolutely not.
You know, Chief Forte, your predecessor, made such a big point of hopping on his Harley and driving around neighborhoods in Kansas City to deal with just what we're talking about here, community relations. What's been your approach on that front?
So my approach is, and Chief Forte did a great job. I mean, we can learn a lot about community relations for how he did it, both locally and nationally it's talked about. One of the things that I would like to do is I'd like to increase our community interaction officers. They are the point of contact at every station. Yeah, with the community. And
explain to our listeners, what are those officers? What do they do?
So those officers work with each patrol division, our 6 patrol divisions have a community interaction officer, and that officer's job is to work with the neighborhood groups, the businesses, you know, crime prevention, what's the issue here, if it's parked cars or whatever, code violations, kind of things that are not necessarily immediate enforcement issues, like someone's having a domestic disturbance. So they might email up at the station, hey, what can I do about this semi parked out front? It's been here for 2 days. I want it gone. Mm-hmm. They handle issues like that, and they're very receptive to the neighborhood concerns. And what I learned from being a division commander of both East and Central is those officers have a capacity issue. There's more requests for their help and services than we can get to in a timely manner. And when I go out on the radio and I say, hey, we want to work with the communities, I want us to be able to respond. So I think we need to build that part of the department so it can handle that capacity.
How many of these community interaction officers do you actually have?
I have 6 now, and I'd like to increase it to 12.
So these folks, if anyone has a concern at 10 o'clock at night, in theory, they'll be able to reach somebody down the road.
No, they would probably email them, and they'd get back to them the next day.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
So what I'd like to do is increase the hours of coverage because they're just there during the day. I'd like to increase that so they're during the day, and then in the evening when some of our residents are home and not at work, so they have more continuity towards the station and more connectivity.
If there's no email at home, they can obviously make a phone call or...
Yeah. The station's open 24/7. They can always call a station.
How about the social workers? You've instituted placing social workers in some of your patrol divisions. Interesting idea, considered innovative. What are you doing there?
Well, we just have one so far. We're looking for funding to get more. It has been innovative. It has been a very big success from my perspective. You know, it's so funny because police can show up in a uniform and we can offer help and assistance, and then we have a social worker who comes in plain clothes, who doesn't have a uniform on, say some of the same things we're saying, and a connection's made like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a different approach. And it's been very successful because, and obviously the social worker we have, Gina, is tremendous, but she can make that connection and she can make things happen. She is a walking encyclopedia of resources in this city, and she knows who to call and to get it done. And it's just been a great connection.
This connects police and victims to social services of one kind or another, right?
Correct.
Yeah, all over. You know, Leland, another story I wrote back in the day had concerned about the low number of officers of color on the police force, which has been a perennial problem going back so many years. What are you doing to address that? And what is the current percentage of, say, African-American officers on the force?
I don't remember the exact.
It's usually like 13-14%, something like that.
It's less. Substantially less than we should have.
Than what the population of the city suggests
Correct.
It should be.
And we should have more Hispanics and Asians, certainly, and women.
Why is it so hard to not get these to the percentages they need to be?
I don't think we have in the past recruited aggressively enough in those communities. We talked about this yesterday, in fact, at the board meeting, because it is one of my passions. I think that the department needs to more accurately reflect the community. And Deputy Chief Oakman, who is himself a black man, is going to aggressively work on that. And in fact, he is giving us a report next board meeting of what his detailed plans are to do to recruit.
I mean, one of the concerns out there at large, again, at least based on my reporting, has been that a lot of times people of color don't want to be police officers. There's a chasm there that's tough to breach.
That's true, and it's sad because it's a great career. Look, we've in this community, we've had a chief of police who's a black man who started at the very bottom of the rung and worked his way up to being chief. The benefits are good. The career is wonderful. Every poll shows that regardless of the problems, police officers are well respected. It's should be a career that people jump into. We are going to aggressively work on it. I can tell you that.
Chief, it's a tough issue.
It is a tough issue. But as Commissioner Shearn said, we are working on it. I mean, this does not go without discussion. And in the police department, we have frequent discussions. As I mentioned at the board yesterday, it's harder to recruit anyone in 2017 than it was years ago. We used to have 400 people show up for a written exam. Now we get a handful. I mean, there's a totally different dynamic in society and how society looks at law enforcement today than it has previously.
Meaning a negative perception that people maybe don't want to engage with.
Correct. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to, and we're fortunate here. We have Kansas City, and I know I'm head of the organization, I'm biased, but we have a very good professional police department here that's looked at across the country. Mm-hmm. And we have to get that message out that this is, even if there's some negativity to law enforcement, that doesn't necessarily happen in Kansas City, and people should look at this job.
816-235-2888 is our phone number. Chief Rick Smith from the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department is here. He's joined by Leland Shearn, the president of the Board of Police Commissioners. Let's go to some calls. And Cindy from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for holding on, Cindy.
Yes, thank you for letting me get on. I know Rick Smith from Sheffield Place, where he worked in the community, and he is outstanding. And I just want to bring support for all the people in Kansas City, Missouri to get behind him and behind the police department. If anybody can do it, he can. And we can help him.
Chief, Cindy, I appreciate your phone call. Chief, when you talked a while ago about the fact the public maybe could help more when it comes to violence in Kansas City, what could people do? How can the community help you guys do your job better?
Well, I will tell you that most violence in this city, someone knows what's going on before it ever happens. It's either on social media, they've talked to one another. I mean, these things don't happen in a vacuum. That people know what's going on. If people were to give us a heads up, we would do everything we could to try and intervene to prevent that from happening. We just had an agreement worked with the Crime Stoppers and the city to increase the reward money for homicides in Kansas City that went from $2,000 to $5,000.
Wow.
I think that's a significant impact.
Yeah.
Nothing happens on this from the police point of view of, you know, we've had the unfortunate homicide, now what we can do, and our goal is to arrest someone, bring someone to justice for that crime, and let them have their day in court. But we need the public's help. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. The police can't do it by themselves.
You know, there's a group in town. They work with the city health department. They're called Aim for Peace, and they're designed to help stop violence before it occurs, just what you're talking about here. They don't work with the police department. They're sort of an independent group. Any sense of how effective Aim for Peace is, and is this an initiative the city should continue to fund or not?
I'm not. Like you say, it's totally independent from the police. I have never seen any paperwork on it. I know nothing about it.
Leland, do you have any sense how effective this group is?
I don't know of them. I'm sorry.
Okay. And also, there's concerns about KC Nova. You've worked closely with them, Chief, and this is the No Violence Alliance. It's designed to sort of wrap social services around people who might commit crime or have already committed crime. Lots of concerns about how effective KC Nova is. What's your sense?
In all of this, I think there's good and bad in everything. And when I interviewed for the board, this conversation came up, and I said, hey, there's a lot of good aspects of KC Nova. And Gina English becoming the social worker at Center Zone came out of KC Nova. It was that kind of model that was repeated at the division station. I mean, is there a problem with group violence in Kansas City? Absolutely. Are we looking at that? Is KC Nova on that? Could we make some changes in implementation or how we address it? Sure. We've already had meetings to talk about, do we need to shift a little bit? And we're going to try a new tactic about picking a specific area where we think we can have some influence, and we're going to try that
tactic. The hotspot policing idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we're going to move that right now. We have an area picked out, and we're going to work with that area and see if that impact is greater than the approach we've had in the past.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Steve from Parkville. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I had a question and concern. We hear in the news about officers responding, not only in Kansas City but elsewhere, to threats to their personal safety. And the ones that get in the news more often, the person gets killed rather than disabled. And a lot of times it turns out to be someone who has a mental problem or something like that. So I wonder, how are the officers trained? Are they trained to try to disable someone who's a threat rather than kill them?
Chief?
Yeah. Well, right now, about 30% of our officers are crisis intervention trained, which is to talk about this topic, dealing with people. We say emotionally disturbed people. We have 30%. One of the things when I went to the board and interviewed the job, I said, that's not enough. We need to get all our patrol officers exposed to this kind of training. So I agree. I think we need increased training in that. We have a 3-year plan to try and get all of our officers some exposure in the crisis intervention training so that we can reduce that or reduce the probability that will happen.
Well, what about concerns about police brutality? The department has had any number of payouts in recent years totaling millions of dollars. What are you doing to address it? How serious of a concern is it?
Well, it's always a concern. I mean, no one wants to be the chief of police and stand up here and talk about the mistakes. Everyone wants to talk about the successes. We've had issues. Do we train on it? Sure, we review it. We have in-service training every year. Do we cover these topics specifically in our firearms courses, in our defensive tactics courses, in our legal courses, all rolled in training? Yes, we cover all these. The idea is to try and prevent it up front, just like anything else in America. We want to prevent this. Are we going to be perfect? No, we're not. We're humans who wear badges and uniforms, and there's going to be mistakes made. But we try and cut that down to the lowest number possible.
Leland Sherin, again, as president of the police board, what's your perspective on this? Since 2012, the department's paid out nearly $6 million in excessive force settlements. What about it?
Well, I don't like the fact that we've paid it out. I don't like the fact that these incidents happen. But officers are human beings like everyone else, and they make mistakes. But when you look at our record, the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department record, to the records of other departments throughout the country, we are much better than most. We do a good job of training our officers and in keeping the emotions and the brutality, as if that's the correct word, down.
Right. What happens to an officer, Chief, who as a result of an incident, the department pays out a settlement? Is that officer still on the force in the wake of that? How are those situations handled?
It's it's based on specific instances. So sometimes an officer will lose a case, but sometimes we don't agree that we lost the case either. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're backing the officer saying that we weren't wrong. In some cases, we address the officer and say, hey, you were wrong and you're going to be disciplined over this up to including termination. And we've had that happen too.
Your point is every situation is unique unto itself.
Correct. As you know, Steve, we could go out here and have a total difference of opinion. We could go out and use force and the public think we're wrong. We think we're legally justified for using that force. Mm-hmm. And we could go to court and get ruled again. It doesn't mean the police department's going to change their position. I mean, it may change our position after the ruling, but we may say, hey, we think our officer acted correctly.
Let's go back to some phone calls here, and let's go to Dolores from Kansas City, Missouri. Dolores, good morning.
Hello. I have a question. What percentage of the Kansas City Police Department have received crisis intervention training, which distinguishes at a call between whether it's a mental health issue or a criminal issue?
That's about 30% right now.
What do you think, Dolores?
Is there a movement to increase that?
Yes. In the next 3 years, we're hoping that all our patrol officers have some sort of crisis intervention training.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm just wondering about the mental health situation. How strong is the mental health safety net in this community? And so many of the folks you encounter are having one issue after another. Sometimes it's really not criminal intent. It's someone who just isn't thinking straight.
Sure, but And let's take a classic example. We have the guy screaming in the middle of the street and scaring everyone to death. Maybe not a crime involved here, but we pull up, and as been said 1,000 times, the criminal justice system is the mental health system. There's no one to call and say, hey, this guy's having crisis, come and help him, take him to the hospital. That's not what happens. They mm-hmm. call the police and say, deal with them. Mm-hmm. And so we either have to try and find some place for them to go, which services are very limited. Now the city has a place that we've used, a crisis center that we're using, but it's voluntary. It's not mandatory. So, that puts limitations on things. Or the other idea is we just have to enforce and put them in jail, and sometimes for their own good.
Right.
So they're safe.
That's Chief Rick Smith. He was joined by Leland Sheeran, the president of the Board of Police Commissioners. You guys took a lot of questions. Thanks very much for indulging us, and appreciate you guys coming in to have a good conversation.
Thank you.
Great
Thank
to
you
be
for
there.
Having us.
We come back this week's Local Listen with Bill Brownlee. It's Wednesday, which means KCUR contributor Bill Brownlee is back with this week's Local Listen. And Bill, how are you?
I'm well, Steve.
Tell us about Stevie Stone.
Stevie Stone is a Missouri rapper who recently moved to Kansas City. He was born in Columbia, spent some time in St. Louis. And he is going to finish up a tour this weekend. He's supporting his fifth album on Strange. But I've selected for us today a clean, profanity-free song from an earlier album called My Remedy.
Let's check out Stevie Stone.
La, 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 la. When I hit the stage, music becomes a remedy. All of my problems fade away. La, 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 la. Soon as I hit the stage, music become my remedy. All of my problems fade away. Hey. La, 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 la. When I hit the stage, music become my remedy. All of my problems fade away. Hey. The dollar need more of it like a commas. Hope it's better tomorrow. More money did it bring more drama. The things I did, forgive me, Heavenly Father. It was necessary. Responsibility, kids to feed. No more chasing penitentiary in me. Away from my kids, they can never be.
You know, Bill, this isn't a style that KCUR listeners are used to hearing on public radio, but what do you like about Stevie Stone?
Well, let's start with that voice.
Yeah. Not bad.
Not bad. He sounds believable. He's entirely convincing. Most of his material are songs about, you know, life in the streets and in the clubs, and his voice sells it. This song, however, is about a sentiment I can relate to, which is the power of live music. And when he says, "All my problems fade away when the lights go down and the music goes up," well, that's the way I feel when I go out to hear music.
You know, I'm not a hip-hop head by any stretch of the imagination, but this track strikes me as very polished. You can tell there's a whole lot of production work that's gone into it here.
Yeah, that's right. Stevie Stone recorded his first album for Ruthless Records, the infamous Los Angeles label. But since then, he's been with Strange Music, Tech9's record
Tech9's
label.
Group, yeah.
The sound associated with Kansas City Strange Music is what we're hearing here, and there's a little plug for Strange Music in this song right now as I speak. But yeah, this is what the sound that has made Strange so popular. This song, for instance, has over a million streams on Spotify.
Wow.
And that's typical for everything that Strange Music touches.
The only thing I know about Strange Music is what I've seen on T-shirts and bumper stickers around town. The logo looks like a snake with wings or something.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a powerhouse record label. It, you know, kind of overshadows pretty much everything on the Kansas City music scene.
You say KC hip-hop fans have likely seen Stevie Stone on stage at, you know, Tech9 concerts over the years. This time around, he's the headliner. Where can listeners see him perform this weekend?
He is playing Saturday at Prohibition Hall, which is a lesser-known club on McGee, in an old Art Deco building. It will be a wild party, I guarantee that.
Who else is playing?
There's a guy named JL who at some point is going to, you know, he's had a few features on Strange Music projects, and JL is probably, he is poised for a big year in 2018.
That's Bill Brownlee with this week's Local Listen, talking about Stevie Stone. Bill, always appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske, and don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. On tomorrow's show, how liberal became a bad word and how the first 4 months of Harry S. Truman's term in the White House surprised and changed the world. Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Justin Garnett produced this show. I'm Steve Kraske. And you are up to date.